We will now call to order the regular meeting of Fountain County Board of Supervisors. We'll begin the pledge of allegiance followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Begin with the adoption of the agenda.
One note, just item J has been withdrawn. We're not going to put that one forward, so that one's been locked. It's listed there, but it's withdrawn from the package.
All right. Do I have a motion?
So made.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. We will now go to your report, Mr. Nichols.
So just a few things to report, Mr. Chair, members of the board. The Sheriff's Office has graduated two new deputies from the Law Enforcement Academy, Deputy Logan Fielding and Deputy Chuck Hoffman. And both of them were delighted to have them to join the patrol division of our sheriff's office. And of note, Deputy Fielding also achieved the highest academic standing in his class too, which is great. So we got a smart cop, I guess is what we call it. So it looks like two great new deputy additions to our sheriff's office, and pleased to have them welcome to Savannah County. Recent tabletop emergency exercises were done. We did a big tabletop exercise down at the community center. And there were 15 different organizations and about 40 individuals. You can see the pictures on the right, where the room is pretty full of individuals from all different kinds of organizations. And then we followed up the following week with a shelter drill over at the high school and at the Emergency Operations Center of the Sheriff's Office. And the entire Social Services Department was there because they manned the shelter and they brought the entire staff over and did a really great job. Debbie Smith, our Emergency Management Coordinator, did a superb job in coordinating this and getting all the agencies there. And it was some really, really fruitful training and lots of good information back to all the agencies and organizations that always helps us improve afterwards by fixing things we've missed or updating our SOPs or other policies and procedures. And a really well done package by Debbie. There's a flyer that I gave you, a little invitation on with your paperwork there about the persimmon tree dedication for Petty Officer Jacob Rigsby, who died 2 years ago on a Navy ship in Westpac in the Far East Asia area of operations. And his mother, who was a firefighter with the Lake Fire Department, is going to be there that day to help honor Petty Officer Rigsby with the dedication of a persimmon tree that we planted a couple years ago in the park. Debbie Smith is over a nice granite plaque that goes at the base of the tree, and then we've got a second one for Mrs. Rigsby as well for the family. And so that's on Monday, June 17th at 6:30. And Mr. Sheridan is asked to do some words there that night, and then we'll dedicate that plaque to Mrs. Rigsby. The Fox Hollow subdivision. Remember, a year or so ago, we worked a long time with Mr. Gene Ott and his neighbors to kind of get Country Creek Way in the system. They did a lot of work on that. The board supported that, and the banks and VDOT. That bond now is released, and the road inspection was fine, so the one-year bond is gone, and the road is fully accepted by VDOT, and so the surety bond from the county is back in our coffers. We have a new Parks and Recreation staff member on board. Dylan Morris started on Monday. He's our new athletics and special events coordinator. And I think he comes to us from the YMCA in Charlottesville, where he was program administration there and had a lot of good experiences he's bringing to Savannah. Seems to be pretty excited and gung-ho and is getting settled into his new job. I also like to introduce, who has not even started yet, but on June 24th, our new community development director, Douglas Miles, will be starting. Douglas is back in the audience back here, Douglas. So Douglas comes to us from Prince George County, brings great 20-some years of great experience in planning and zoning, and has kind of had almost every position you can imagine in the planning and zoning field. And so having him coming to lead our staff for our planning, zoning, building inspections, code enforcement, erosion sediment control, building inspections, and economic development is a great thing for Fluvanna County to have someone of Douglas's experience and depth of knowledge. He and his wife will be moving to the Fluvanna area as they find a new place to live here, and we're delighted to have him coming on board in 3 weeks. And I know Eric is pretty happy. 2 weeks.
Almost. Yeah. Two and a half.
Eric's happy.
So who's counting?
He's got a new turnover with me sooner or later. So anyway, so welcome, Douglas. Appreciate having you on joining the Fluvanna team. And then I just wanted to show you, we created a new advertisement package we use for all of our advertisements for jobs. So this is, whenever we put it on our website, or we put it on the VACO website, or on Indeed.com or others, this is what applicants see. They see a blurb about Fluvanna County and what we're about and what our community is all about. And then there'll be the information about the specific position there, follow-up information about, you know, some of the details and how they get a hold of us. And then there's information about our compensation benefits, a little bit about our organizational structure, the code of ethics that we have for our employees, that the employees adopted here, and then kind of where we're at, how they get to our offices for the interviews and how they come in here to the government center, and then just let them know that Fluvanna County is right in the middle of it all, and we'd be delighted to have them join our team. So this is what applicants see when they apply for jobs with Fluvanna County now with this package, and we were pleased to have that out there that kind of talks all the good things about our county. And I think
who would have made up that package? Who all would have worked on that to have put it together?
His predecessor.
Oh, okay.
Me. Me.
Yes.
Right. But he and Kelly and Jessica and others chopped it all because they're the ones that found all the errors that were in it. But we put that together because we really want folks to know what kind of great place this is to be. You've got a work session tonight, right after this meeting. That's the space utilization study work session. You'll have a closed session and dinner, and then followed by a work session. And then remember, next meeting, the 19th, is the joint Board of Supervisors and Planning Commission work session here in the courthouse, where we're going to be looking at the codes of ordinances and business license and state fire protection code and things like that, and all the Planning Commission and the fire chiefs have all been invited to that meeting as well. And then you've got your just regular July meeting, the double meeting in July, and then you're off until the first meeting in August. Any questions I can answer for the board?
Thank you very much. All right. Having no questions, I will now open the first round of public comment. Anyone wish to address the board should come to the podium, state your name and address. Keep your comments 5 minutes on topic and direct it to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak at this time? Okay, seeing none, I will now close the first round of public comment. We have no public hearing, so we'll begin with action matters. A, the county attorney agreement. Mr. Nichols.
So as is standard, we bring the county attorney agreement normally in May or June each year to reaffirm that the services from Mr. Payne's firm are going to be continued for the following fiscal year. This agreement goes into effect July 1st for the following for 1 year, and the rates are the same as they are currently for this year. So no changes on terms or on rates that are in the proposed documents.
Just one thing really quick, correct me if I'm wrong, but the county attorney has proposed the same service rates for FY18 as of currently.
18, 19, and 20 will all be the same.
Well, I'm just haven't changed. Okay. Just date-wise, that's just something.
Got it.
Holy cow, I hadn't even looked up. I'm used to not being prayer.
Yeah, sure.
I'm Will Tanner.
And Mr. Fred's our deputy county administrator, our county attorneys, and is covering for Fred tonight. He was at his granddaughter's graduation.
That's right, she graduated.
Been out of town.
All right. Are there any questions or anything? All right, do we have a motion?
I move to approve the county attorney's compensation agreement for fiscal year 2020 services effective July 1st, 2019, with no change in rates for from FY19.
We have a motion made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Did you hear you open the floor, Brian?
Yeah, I said aye.
Five-zero. We'll now move forward with B. Net motion addendum. Ms. Booker.
Good evening. As part of our CAD system, our responders needed a virtual private network in order to communicate and transmit data over the secured lines with dispatch and each other. NetMotion specifically is designed for mobile devices. It accounts for poor signal, dropped calls, data, and data by enhancing and optimizing the network connectivity. It allows for transparent transitions between cellular, Wi-Fi, and wired networks. The department has been using this service since August of 2018 with no issues and wishes to continue using it. The current contract we signed with them was for 1 year with the option of renewals. They've given us the option this year, instead of just renewing for 1 year, to renew for 3 years at a pretty significant savings. Over the three-year time frame, it'll save us $3,780. Because of the cost savings with other maintenance contracts, 911 has said that they can cover that entire $15,120 cost this year out of their budget without asking for additional money. And then that will save us in the coming years in the budget. Any questions?
What was it before? Are these same rates as...
It is the same rate. The last contract we had actually only went... from August until July, so it was a prorated amount, but for the entire year, it is the same amount, with the savings for the 3 year.
Our Director of Communications, Mr. Grandstaff, is here in case you have questions, and I'm assuming the 6,300, was that's the prorated amount, it was a prorated amount less than that for that,
yeah, it was less than that.
So with the renewal, the 3 year renewal, it's significantly less.
We're getting almost 1 year for free. About two-thirds of a year. I know you like it. I just want to make sure that seems
fine. I saw it.
All right. Do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors to approve the addendum to the contract between County of Savannah, Virginia, and AT&T Mobility National Accounts LLC for the net motion mobility contract of $15,120 for 3 years of service, further authorize county administrator to execute the agreement subject to approval as to form by the county attorney.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Booker and seconded by Ms. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passed 5-0. Tab C. Next Generation Core Services Solution, Ms. Dole.
In September 2018, the board approved acceptance of the Next Generation 911 grant from VITA. The grant funds will be used to replace the current voice logging software and other equipment related to E911. The voice logging software is used to monitor and verify communications and interactions. It allows dispatchers to rapidly and proactively listen in and instantly review any call. The NextGen 911 is a statewide initiative with no option for not deploying the system. We have to do it. Oops, I went the wrong way. The state award grant is estimated at $246,000. The grant pays the full cost of the one-time installation of the system and pays for the first 24 months of increase from what we're currently paying. So our current software system costs are approximately $4,529 a month. The estimated new cost is going to be $5,563. That's an additional $1,034 a month that the grant will be paying for 24 months. And that is just an estimate. They will not be able to get us final numbers until closer to implementation time. This is a participation agreement with AT&T, and it's through Fairfax County. Fairfax County did the solicitation with them specifically for this initiative, and we are riding on that participation agreement with them. And the call handling equipment, that will be done later, so that will be an additional cost later on. This is only for the monthly software costs. Any questions?
So it's going to cost approximately $60,000 a year, is that right? Am I reading that right?
Four. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. About $12,000 more a year than we've been paying.
Right.
That was a monthly, the $55 was a monthly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
$12,000 more
and it was
for us after year two.
Yeah, he usually did.
Yeah, and again, for the first 2 years, we are only going to pay what we're currently paying. After that, we have to budget for the additional cost. But again, there's really just no option.
Right.
Yeah. And what we're presently using, this voice logging software, is that outdated or required?
It will be with the next gen 911. It will be outdated and won't be able to be used anymore.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, she saved us $3,800 with one breath.
Just never stopped, does it?
Yeah,
we tried to find somebody closer,
like,
but no.
All right. Do we have any other questions? Do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the participation agreement between the County of Nevada, Virginia, and AT&T Corp. for the next generation core services solution with the non-recurring cost we bill directly to VDOT under the NG 911 grant. And further authorize the County Administrator to execute the agreement subject to approval as informed by the County Attorney.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, second by Ms. Seeger. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye.
Thank you.
And down to D. F-119 CSA Purchase of Services Supplemental Budget Appropriation. Mr. Moore.
Okay. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
This is a request for an additional appropriation for our current annual budget. For this fiscal year, the board approved an amount of $2,850,000. This was a combination of funding from both the Children's Services Act statewide as well as local funding. Originally, we were going to request $200,000, but after some recent new figures came in today, looks like we are going to be requesting only $100,000 in appropriation, $47,640 of that to be paid by the County of Flavanna. The remaining $52,360 will be coming from state funding. Now, one thing I do want to mention with this is that this is more of a contingency rather than an actual expense. As of right now, our current estimated balance we have is approximately $67,400 remaining to spend for this fiscal year. These are funds that have not yet been encumbered by any services approved by our family assessment and planning team. If you look at the figures that we have for ever since fiscal year you'll see that been upward trend until fiscal year 17, and then as of last year, a significant decrease in funding. The number that is incorrect, it should be $2,950,000, which is our projected expenses. Realistically, there is a really good chance that we may not even need to touch this money. This could be the first year since at least 2000 in which we will actually not use all of our money allocated for this fiscal year. However, there's a couple of things that have come up in the past month that we do need to prepare for, hence the contingency that I mentioned earlier. The other thing I want to mention is that if you take a look at the expenditures for the past 16 months, you'll see you've got a few months that are really, really high. One is extremely high, but that's usually all vendors trying to get their invoices paid before the end of the fiscal year. But that aside, you'll notice a small but consistent downward trend in monthly spending from month to month. So this, as I mentioned to you all in my report back in November of 2018, our program is working to, or trying to work smarter, not harder. And the numbers here are indicating that we're making some progress towards that vision. Now, one thing I asked, but what are the biggest expenses we're having so far? And honestly, it's mostly educational and residential services. That takes up approximately over half of our costs. And it's a very small number of children that use these types of these services. If you take a look here, for this year, we are currently having 18 children from our schools going outside the county to be educated throughout both the normal school year as well as during the extended school year over the summer period. Those costs are continuing to go up, and most of that is driven more by an increase in the population or the number of kids that we're actually sending out of county, rather than any like extreme increases in the rates these schools are actually charging us. One nice trend that is very nice is that in the past 2 years, we've seen a huge decrease in the amount of children that we're sending to residential treatment programs. If you take a look at fiscal year 17 here, we had 26 children. That was roughly one-fourth of all the children that we serve here in this county. This year, we are anticipating 15. And that is, bear in mind, this is a projection. It's not the actual amount. The actual amount is actually about a third less than this. But the other hidden cost that hasn't been talked about much is this line here, but we're talking about residential education. When a child goes to a residential treatment program, we have to pay not only for the residential program itself, but also any educational cost for the child while they're in that program, which is something that is paid for through CSA funds. So when the child's going to residential, it's actually double the cost of what you see here on the line just for the residential treatment alone. But the other nice thing that you see here is, again, that downward trend I talked about earlier, we're also seeing it in how much of our budget is actually being applied towards just these three lines. So in the past 2 years, we've seen almost 20% decrease. We are hoping that trend to continue downwards. But again, this is going to be, it's a slow, gradual process as any major change in any significant program culture requires. So, and this is where the contingency I mentioned comes into play. One of the big factors, two of the factors that are driving our cost this year is an increase in a 20% increase in our private day placements for this fiscal year, meaning that what we predicted at the beginning of this fiscal or to happen in this fiscal year was lower than what actually occurred. We had a significant number of new students actually enter in educational day placements this year. Some of it were children that transferred from other localities, but a good number of them are new placements that started this academic year. However, in the past 2 months, we've seen a huge increase in the number of requests for children going to residential treatment programs. Up until past May, we had 2 requests for residential placements. This past month, we have 5. Of them, 3 of them are a combination of the Food and Community Services Board and Juvenile Domestic Relations Court. One is through a foster care placement, and one is actually an educational placement, which is very uncommon, but it does happen. So the $100,000 is to address any potential placements that actually do get approved by our family assessment and planning team, as well as by our community policy and management team. Does the board have any questions?
So these figures that are on their motion are different than what they're in the package, and they're less. It was $200,000 in the package. It's come down to $100,000, and then the total budget, instead of being $3.05 million, is $2.95 million. And I just made error on that slide. I didn't correct that one thing right here. This should be $2.950. So that's better news than what was expected.
Yes, very good.
I had one question. I thought I saw on there, I was reading it, 38 county.
Yeah. That is the base rate on that. That's the base rate for that. Because most of this additional appropriation would be going towards residential placements, that is actually reimbursed to the county at a lower rate than there. So
we have to pay a higher rate.
It's a possibility, yes.
All right. Thank you. That was the only question I had when I saw 47. All right. Do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve a supplemental appropriation of $100,000 for the FY19 CSA purchase of services budget, with the $47,640 local portion of funding to come from unassigned fund balance and the state portion of $52,360 to come from the Office of Children's Services.
Second.
Okay, got a motion made by Ms. Ingram, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Thank you, Mr. Moore. And we will now move forward with E, the Columbia Area Renewal Effort, Charter and Member Extension.
So the charter was originally a one-year charter. You extended it for a year. This is just asking to continue. The CARE Task Force is still doing their work, still get lots of good attendance at every meeting, lots of good discussion, and we're making progress. So I'd like to just reaffirm that charter for another year and extend the current membership of the task force.
Any questions from anyone?
Yeah, what is the balance now? We take that $123,000 away. Unassigned fund balance. What is that balance now?
Are we at the last one?
It's in E.
Okay.
It's in E, but that's not
actually
there. Yeah. That's moved around. Yeah. Right. We don't have any money.
Transposed.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Switched.
We don't have any money.
Okay. I'm switching around.
Yeah. No money assigned to the task force, sir.
Okay.
Yeah, well, the task force is indeed just like that.
I've moved to approve a one-year extension of the CARE Task Force charter until June 30, 2020, and further move to extend task force member appointments for terms to end June 30, 2020.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passed 5-0. We'll now move forward to F, initiation of zoning text amendment. Industrial setbacks, Mr.
Robinson. Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'm going to give a brief presentation about a text amendment that has been discussed to our setbacks for our industrial districts. So on the screen are our current setbacks, and I'll explain them. Currently, we have two industrial districts, I-1, which is the Industrial Limited, and then I-2, which is Industrial General. In the I-1 district, we currently require a front setback of 100 feet and a 50-foot setback for parking areas. In I-2, we require a 200-foot front setback, and there is no setback requirement specified for parking areas, so that's just 200 feet. Now, I will mention that if you see on the screen, there are some asterisks. There is an exception in the I-1 district, so while the setback is normally 100 feet, in I-1 you can go less than 100 feet down to 50 feet if that street is within a subdivision for business or industrial use, and if it is a cul-de-sac or interior road. And then you see there's still a parking lot are still required to be 25 feet from any street right of way. Now, as to how this discussion came about, there was a variance case that the Board of Zoning Appeals heard recently. It went before the Board of Zoning Appeals last month, and that case is currently been deferred. That case involved a variance request for one of the lots in Zion Station subdivisions, which is up at the crossroads. So on the screen was the concept plan from that variance case and the setbacks that they were requesting. So just so you know, Zion Station subdivision is the industrial use subdivision that we have. The entrance is across from the intersection of Troy Road on 250. And you know, when you turn in, you go up the hill and around the curve. So on the screen here, as you approach the first intersection in the subdivision, if you were to turn down that street to the left, which is Zion Station Court, that'll take you back to Carbon Core and Bright Ideas. And then the subject lot that was a part of the variance case is right on that corner as you turn to go down that street. So as you saw on the previous screen, our ordinance normally requires 100 feet, but because this lot was in an industrial subdivision, they could go down to 50 feet. But even that 50 feet, the applicant was finding some challenges trying to meet that 50-foot setback. And this is how they wanted to position the building on the site, and it encroached into the 50-foot setback on both street corners. And I will mention that because this is a corner lot, they were required to meet that 50-foot from both streets because that is treated as a front yard. So that's some background about the variance case that's currently under discussion and how we got to this point. So the variance case, it wasn't approved or denied. There were some concerns from the county attorney about the case or the criteria that it's required to meet by state code in order to be granted a variance. There were concerns that the case may not fully meet all of those criteria. And there was discussion about this may be an opportune time for the county to maybe take a look at the setback requirements of our industrial subdivisions to see if maybe we want to make an ordinance amendment. So that's how this came about. So as I proceed to the next screen, our county attorney has been proactive and gone ahead and drafted a draft text amendment. And currently, on the screen, this is the language that would be amended within our I-1 district. So what he has done, if you were to read through, he has removed the minimum 50-foot setback. And here, basically, that draft language talks about how the location of buildings and accessory structures shall be located to provide safe and efficient access to, from, and within the property. So as you see from that language, there is no minimum setback, or there would no longer be a minimum setback. Now, of course, this is just draft language, so it still need to be discussed and by the Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors, but this is what has been drafted to date.
And just a note on that, if remember, there's a whole process you go through. Just because it doesn't specify a minimum distance, you still have to go through the site development plan, and in that process, then you'll have to, the Planning Commission would have to determine whether or not site distances are reasonable and are appropriate. But the drawing you just saw on the previous page, on this one, you can see that this is a pretty easy intersection right there. If you're coming up out of the traffic circle and going to the west there, you can see across that lot because it's where the parking lot is. If you're coming out this way, you can see across the lot to other traffic. And so even this building, the way it's situated, wouldn't block views and things like that. So it really would be an individual case by case on what that lot would actually handle and how it would best work. But it gives you the latitude, and then subsequently the Planning Commission, the latitude to be more reasonable on a lot that doesn't interfere with other people's business and is still safe. And Mrs. Eager was at the BZA. Planning Commission at the BZA, and she can probably explain that as well along with Mr. Robinson.
That's correct.
So we're really changing the zoning of this to suit this particular situation, even though it applied to anybody else in the future.
Part of the ability of the BZA to make approvals of exceptions, part of the reason they can't do it is if a remedy is available by a change to an ordinance. And if the ordinance can be reasonably changed to take the zoning exception need away, then there's no need to do the Board of Zoning Appeals. So I always call it the Board of Exceptions, because that's what they're doing. They're approving exceptions. In this case, if they approve an exception, when there is a legislative remedy available, it's really not what they're supposed to be doing. And so you would do the legislative remedy if you think it's reasonable for our county by directing this process to start. And then they would no longer need a zoning exception as long as they pass the test of reasonableness based on the language here when they do the site development plan and VDOT takes a look at it and all the site distances and things. So it's specifically brought up and occasioned by this company's need, but it brought up a question that would apply to lots of industrial, and since you're going to do a lot of development along Zion Crossroads, the corridor of 250, I think this is probably needed again and again.
I thought that the BZA thought that it should be allowed, mm-hmm. but because it was available to rezone it so that it was more applicable to other businesses and industry, they decided to defer it and come to us and see if it was possible to make the zoning change.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to go back to them after we
It would
just be withdrawn. I believe, I don't think they'd even have to approve it or disapprove it. It would be withdrawn because he would no longer require an exception. Now, he's already been encumbered by the fee, and we would likely refund that fee back to him if there is no longer an exception needed, and the county would likely refund the fee back to him.
And that comes to the board. The board has to...
Right, so and Mr. Robbins will explain the I-2 district, but what happens is you're going to say, yes, we'd like to take a look at this. It would go to the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission would review it and have a public hearing so that others can comment. And then after that process, it would come to you for a public hearing for a zoning text amendment change to our ordinances. And so it's that formal step-by-step process. You're directing them to start the process. Planning Department and then Planning Commission would go on through that, and then it would come back to you for formal public hearing too.
Now,
we go into the second one and then jump in, sorry.
Okay.
I was just gonna say that had the BZA approved this, the man could have a shovel in the dirt. Mm-hmm. Now it's gonna take three more months or so.
The conundrum here is there is no way, there's no current way, based on your standard practice, to have this done before the second meeting in August. Mm-hmm. Now, there's no reason why you can't designate a different date in July, later in July, to have a meeting, because I think the Planning Commission is going to hear it on July 11th, mm-hmm. and then you could have a public hearing the following week if you wanted to schedule a special meeting. That would be, you'd be done by July 18th, or we can ask the county attorney. I'm not sure, you might be able to do a joint public hearing on July 11th with the Planning Commission and just do it all in one fell swoop. They're already meeting that night. If you do it jointly and do a joint public hearing, which we've done before, then it would be done earlier and you wouldn't have to wait too long. If you think this is the right thing to do, that's
right. It's certainly possible as long as the notice requirements can be met. The notice 15.2-2204 can be met and given that it's June 5th, I don't think there's going to be any problem meeting those notice requirements if that's what was intended by the board, if that's what the board really wants to do.
Right.
Anything, any other comments from the board about that?
No.
All okay with that?
Well, I would mention that because the BZA case was deferred, we do have it scheduled to go back to the BZA on the 18th of this month. But at that point, based on the discussions that will have occurred since their last meeting and up to that meeting, that'll determine the applicant will have a choice at that point how he wants to move forward.
If I may add one legal thing, in a situation like this where the ordinance as it exists applies to a particular site, and that site has a reasonable use, the applicant in the BZA for the variance is not entitled to it as a matter of law.
Right.
So, and from my understanding, from talking to Fred about this yesterday, the applicant in this case already has an approved site plan, and this is a revision of that site plan that actually ends up going outside of the established setbacks that are currently in effect. And that's what was the genesis of the BZA case that we're struggling with here. So the problem that they face, and I think my understanding is the applicant actually agreed with this, is they know that they're not really entitled by law to the variance. And so this process is what is necessary in order to address the concerns that this particular project has brought up, and frankly, the concerns that a number of other projects I'm sure will bring up in the future.
It solves it in a much more formal legal way for a long term, and it clarifies it. And it gives the site development plan process a reasonable chance to look at something in view of that specific site and those specific lines and that specific circumstance. And so anyway, and here's the I-2 amendment proposed.
Basically the same language, almost identical to what you saw for the I-1 district. It would allow a reduction below the 200-foot setback if the street is within an industrial or business subdivision or on a cul-de-sac or an interior road. So basically allowing an exception also in the I-2 district as it does in the I-1 district. So that concludes my presentation. And we do have the draft ordinance available if you'd like to see that.
And what you had on the screen there was the draft ordinance.
Yes.
We've got another document. But two different sections, one for I-1, one for I-2. And what we would need from the board is direction to move forward with potential zoning text amendment. And it would start with the Planning Commission and then going on. If you want to do it as a joint public hearing on July 11th, then we would just need to know that tonight too, so we could do the appropriate advertising and schedule and things like that.
We did that basically more than a little bit more than a month at that time.
It was good.
Yeah. The month that you were talking about.
Yeah, that would be a Tuesday evening, June 11th is when their meeting would be, and you just do a joint one. And it would be
June the 11th?
Sure. July 11th, I'm sorry.
Okay, I was going to say
June 11th is important day. June 11th is the Medicare day, so. Not that I'm counting.
All right. Do we have head nods?
Yes.
It's all right. The rest of the board wants to hear that.
Okay, so I see three nod already. So we could move forward with it. Do we have a motion?
I move that the Lavanna County Board of Supervisors adopt the attached resolution to initiate a zoning text amendment to amend Chapter 22 of the Lavanna County Code for yard setback regulations of the I-1 Industrial Limited and I-2 Industrial General zoning districts and to schedule a future public hearing for formal Planning Commission consideration and recommendation to the Board of Supervisors.
Do we have a second? Motion made by Ms. Seeger, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye.
And based on the guidance, we'll set up for a joint meeting on July 11th.
You said July 11th?
July 11th.
That's a Thursday?
Tuesday, isn't it?
It's a Thursday.
They meet on Tuesday.
I'm sorry, July 9th. July 9th. It is booked July 9th.
Yeah, yeah. I know that June 11th, it ain't 20, there's not 21, 28 days.
So. July 9th. Yeah, sorry.
July 9th.
Tuesday.
What time?
Tuesday. It'll be 7 p.m.
7.
Yeah. And we'll get it to you.
Give the invitations and have four times I will forget everything. Yeah. Gee. Jeff, moving on to appointments, Jefferson Area Board of Job for Aging, Board of Directors, Ms. Harrison. The other Ms. Harrison?
Sorry. We've got just a reappointment to the Jefferson Board of Aging, and Ms. Kane, Marta Kane, the CEO, is recommending reappointment of Mr. Bevins to the job board. She sent a letter of support for this.
Where is it moved?
Right on the screen. Okay. You're from the yellow down to this line. Now.
Okay. I move the Board of Supervisors approve the following board, commission, or committee appointment. Ms. Bevins, and he is sitting right over there, to the Jefferson Air Board Job and Wage. Thank you.
I have a second.
Second.
Motion is made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. There are no presentations, so we'll move forward to the consent agenda. But you said J, I believe.
J is withdrawn, yes, sir.
So we'll have H, minutes for May 15th, 2019. Ms. Harris, aye, new hire salary ratification, community development director, Ms. Rice, and K, Zions Crossroads sergeant change order number one, Ms. Tolley. Are we pulling anything?
I move we approve the consent agenda.
And you pulled the J,
as
you said.
And we withdrew J. Okay, and I have a motion made by Ms. Booker. Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion been seconded by Ms. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Hearing none, approve the consent agenda. Just get my check down here. All right, is there any unfinished business? How about new business? Hearing none, I will now open the second round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board, please approach the witness chair. Keep your comments to 5 minutes. 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak at this time? Nobody wants to come to the witness chair? I will now close the second round of public comment. Mr. O'Brien?
Mr. Chair, I move Salina County Board of Supervisors entering to a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A1, Section 2.2-3711A3, Section 2.2-3711A5, Section 2.2-3711A6, Section 2.2-3711A8 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purposes of discussing personnel, real estate, prospective industry, investment of funds, and legal matters.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We are now in closed session. And we are moving to the Morris Room.